Please be advised this podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature. It's not appropriate for children.
I'll tell you that one. Listen to this one. I can't think of his name, but his nickname was Deputy Dog. The Crims hated him because he was on our side. He used to go out to the Sunbury Farm. You ever heard of the Sunbury Farm, Pentridge? We had cattle out there. Sunbury, the jail owned it or something, and bring the cows, slaughter them, bring them into the kitchens. Half of those blokes were meat killers and slaughter, you know. And he used to go out there. He was the gardener. My wife went in once, out the front in the garden. He'd come and said hello. In those days, it was before computers, and you could look at their cards. He used to come over to me one day. He wanted to talk. He was all right to talk to. You see, oh, Mr. Ruddick, he says, I didn't do that. I didn't kill his wife. He was accused of killing his wife. I'll tell you the story. I didn't do it. Why didn't they charge me? Well, what happened? In Tasmania, he was on a tractor, because I read it on his card. He was going through a gate. He had a trailer on the back of his tractor with a shotgun on it. And the dog jumped on the shotgun, set the trigger off and shot her in the back. And he got away with it. So he comes to Victoria. It's another woman who owns a farm. Have a guess what? The dog jumped on the shotgun, shot her in the back, going through a gate. Two. Got away with it. No. 3 months later, one of the detectives, the old blokes with the Rothmans in his mouth, goes, that's a familiar case. Got him twice. Gotcha. Back to court, and he got convicted. But he used to cry, I didn't do it. But you couldn't argue with them and say, yeah, I know you did it, like on prisoner. You didn't do that. Because they said they got you outnumbered. You can't rile them up. They could hurt you. And what are you going to do? Give them another life sentence. Someone who's doing two life sentences and does something wrong, how do you punish them? You can't.
Everyone's favourite Pentridge guard, Vaughan Ruddick, is back. Mr. Ruddick took Emily and I and about 50 patrons for a walk around what's left of Pentridge on a beautiful January day this year. There's a highlight reel available for patrons on our Patreon page, as well as a long-lost documentary about Pentridge Prison that was made around the time it closed down in the late 90s. It features Vaughan and Chopper Reed, among others. If you'd like to have access to that and to more exclusive content and events like it, you need to go to patreon.com/AustTrueCrimePod. That's A-U-S-T, True Crime Pod, and become a patron. For just $5 US a month, you get at least one extra episode of Australian True Crime every 4 weeks, plus free events, giveaways, and whatever else we can dig up.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
Without further ado, let's get to this week's episode with the one and only Vaughan Ruddick, who brings us more tales from his days as a guard at Pentridge Prison. This week, we hear about one of the world's most prolific self-mutilators, one of Australia's most notorious kidnappers, and of course, all roads inevitably lead to Chopper Reed. We begin, though, with one of the most vivid and terrifying stories of the 146-year history of Pentridge Prison.
John Price, interesting bloke. He's a murderer, John Price. He used to be in H Division, come towards you. Stern kid, his eyes like cobra's eyes. He looked at you marching down the tunnel. They flickered like a cobra. He wasn't normal. He had murderer's eyes that flickered. He wouldn't look at you. He killed his girlfriend and her mother.
Oh.
Came to D Division in 1972-3. I found it once on YouTube. I can't find it again. The name, I met her. So they were in D Division one Sunday afternoon and a Salvation Army band came in. The prisoners were sitting there because a lot of the prisoners are okay. They love this stuff. John Price, the nutcase, and I can't think of his offside, jumped up with a knife.
No.
Grabbed the 14-year-old girl, tambourine girl. Peter Hannay, my boss, he was the governor of my time, he jumped up, got his hand cut. All the other prisoners got up to help her because you can't do that, 14-year-old girl. Some of these people have got moles. Grabbed her, Peter got his hand cut, and that's why I was in H Division when I started in 78. He cut her throat.
No!
Yeah, cut her throat.
Oh, my God.
So this is where you say capital punishment.
Oh, my God.
How many people are you allowed to kill before, you know, in jail they still kill each other? You've got to stop that. Salvation Army girl, that was that. Now, I'm doing the story goes on, Emily.
She survived or she died?
Yeah, she cut her throat. She survived.
Good Lord.
So I'm doing the tours with Peter Norden and on the 98, 99. Remember Rainy Sunday came in? I used to come in. I loved doing it. Come in early. Peter Norden got me. So Vaughan, we've got a Salvation Army woman coming in. Her name is, I can't remember her name. She's coming in. She's the one who got a throat cut in 1972-3. I says, yeah, I know the story. I know where it happened. He says, well, she does. It was a blur to her now. Still petrified. She's coming in with a psychiatrist this morning. Would you take her in today, show her where it happened, have a talk to her?
Mm.
I said, I'm not a counsellor. Mm. No, I like the way you handle things. So, all right, I'll talk to her. So I met her and she said, hello, Vaughan. My name is Cheryl. Cheryl?
Jeez.
That's close. And she had the gravelly voice. She's in her 40s and she was shaking like a dog shitting razor blades. She was trembling, you wouldn't believe. So we went in the D. Her psychiatrist stood there. I said, do you remember where it happened? No idea, it was just a blur. So when it happened here in the grill gate, and I told her what happened to Price. I said, he's dead now. He hung himself in J Division one afternoon. Sad occasion. Sad occasion. So he hung himself, and the best thing that happened to him, because he couldn't hurt anyone else. And she thanked me. Get a life back together.
That's very powerful.
Anyone want a hanky with these stories?
No, it's...
But I'd love to know her name again. I thought about ringing up Peter Hannay to find out what her name was.
Do you know what? Someone will tell us, I think, from listening to
the
podcast.
It is on YouTube, and that's how I got her name. Is this fascinating stuff?
Yeah,
or what,
yeah, no, it really is. You've got so many stories. It's incredible.
Well, this is 16 years, and you stood around telling stories. Or, oh, did you hear what happened to him? Yeah, chopper did cut his, you know. What do you do at work all day? You just sit by a computer, do you? Rig a few clients.
Go to meetings.
I go to work. Stuff. This is one of my days at work.
See, I don't have the personality for that. I would end up anxious and hypervigilant.
Yes.
That's what happens to me. If I'm in a situation where anything could happen suddenly, I end up panicking about what's next, what's next, what's next.
Well, you wouldn't last long.
No.
Anyone who
I
went
can't
there and started to feel sorry for them, started giving them letters.
And I would do that.
Stood at your cell door, you're not going to last long. You've got to put a wall up, and even though they've cut their throat, got stabbed, you've got to say, you can't get involved.
And you know what else?
You've got to separate.
I would end up having sex with one of them in a cupboard. Vaughan, I would so do that.
You would?
Yeah.
Are you going to be like Patricia Arquette in that show?
Yes.
But then, then it will get out of hand. You know, all of a sudden.
I know it does. You keep telling me it does, yes.
They start you off.
They'd be writing me nice letters.
Not on a bag of drugs. They start you off, oh, excuse me, Mr. Blake, my wife, could you bring a letter in for me? Could you bring two letters? Within a few weeks, listen, if you don't bring some drugs in, I'm going to tell the gov that you've been trafficking. You know what I mean? They got you. And your life's ruined.
They'd be writing me letters, wouldn't they? Or they'd be going, oh, your hair looks nice today, Miss Laurie. And then it'd be all like, I'm going to tell the governor you've been in the cupboard.
Can I shock you three?
Yeah.
I don't think women should be in a man's jail.
No, I get it.
I can argue because I'm in a different world now. But no, we weren't allowed in Fairleigh to work with the women.
Mm.
No, but they were allowed in there. I'll give you a reason why.
I'm genuinely saying I think I could be – I get the susceptibility.
Yeah, we spoke about that, didn't we? About the it's almost grooming.
Yeah.
You go to work one day, 8 o'clock, hospital escort started. It's always overtime. Hundreds of them, hospital escorts. The great stories what happened in hospitals. You know, go, quick, get down to A Division. Prisoners try to commit suicide. Dusko Kalajek, lovely bloke in his 40s. He thought he's going to be deported. Try to kill himself.
Oh, no.
The ambulance was on the way. So I opened up the door – and he's laying on his bed. He cut two stakes out of his arms.
Oh.
They bled. Then he cut his throat. Ear to ear. He was breathing and coughing blood balls out of his open throat. Blood like you wouldn't believe. Mm. Oh, my God. I've just come to work. Just had me breakfast. Quick, get up. Get a warrant. Get the gun. Ambulance. In they come. Suction down his throat. Mm. Bandaged him up. Got him into hospital in the Royal Melbourne. This is one day for me. You at your computer. This is what prison officers do. Not every day.
But you never know when.
Yeah.
Get him to the Royal Melbourne, rushed him through, into surgery. If he's going to get a full anaesthetic, we can leave. But if he's going to have an arm block, be awake, we're still going to be with him. So in he goes, sewed his throat up, his windpipe. You want to see the blood balls coughing out of the ambulance and the blood. He must have lost half his blood. So they patched him up. I'm there with 16 hours with him. So midnight, we get relieved by the night shift, and he's laying in bed, trying to sip water, and he's So next day, my mate's sitting there next to him. This is the seventh story of the Royal Melbourne Hospital. The old part where they had doors and a balcony. Remember, this is 1980, 81, I don't know. So mate's sitting there with a gun, sitting there. All of a sudden, he's looking around. He suddenly pulls all the tubes out, jumps out of bed, and he's gone to get up. No, he's not handcuffed because he's pretty sick. Jumped over the old bloke next to him. Remember the old fellow who's 80? Jumped over him, crashed through the glass door, dived seven stories into the car park.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They came back to work that day with took the handcuffs off the body and the gun come back. That's one day. Dusko Kalajic. He thought he was going to be deported. He poor bloke. And I liked the bloke. I used to work with him in one of the gangs. Yeah, so...
What was he in jail for?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
Oh, God.
I don't think he'd be much. I don't think he wasn't a leech. Probably fraud or... I've got no idea. Stick-ups or something, I don't know.
Oh, the poor bugger.
That's just one day. Oh. That's one day.
No.
Oh, another day. Little things like this. You heard of Chopper Reed, haven't you?
I think maybe. I can't remember.
Well, this is about Chopper. When did he get out? 91? 91. I was a mail officer for 3 years. Not allowed to read the mail by law, but I used to do a little bit of da-da-da, interesting characters. I got the parole letter from Margaret. If Chopper, if you let him out, Mark gets out of jail.
Oh, little Margaret, he used to call her in his books, remember? Little Margaret.
So if he gets out of jail, we're going to go to Tasmania, live happily ever after, you know, like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. So he gets granted parole, off they go. Anyway, next thing I hear, he's married, but not Margaret or some other Sheila I saw in the paper.
Yes,
yeah. So just before that, he's in H Division. A bloke by the name of Frankie Waghorn. He's a murderer, drugs, little happy fat bloke. He's mentioned in the Chopper books, Frankie, little Frankie. He's dead now, they're all dead. Little happy bloke. I went down, I said, look, Frankie Waghorn, his mail's up the shit, it's up. I've got to go and do his... He said, he's down in number 10 exercise yard. It was a laundry yard. They had him and Chopper with a laundryman. And all the books I've read about Chopper, he never mentioned he was the laundryman doing the sheets and the pillowcases, you know what I mean? Not too much starch to me collar, but he was the laundryman. Number 10, remember number 10 was the laundry yard. When I went, there's Frankie and Chopper. In I go with him, Frankie, your mail's up the shit. So I wanted to know something. I said, Frank, what happened to Beeper, Johnny Turner? He was a prisoner we had in B Division. He was murdered. And I know Frankie murdered him. He said, oh, Frankie, oh, yeah, we knocked him off, boss. He's dead, yeah. Well, I said, no, you did. What'd you kill him for? He got married in jail to a woman in B Annex and divorced without ever consummating. I don't think they consummated.
There were no together. Conjugals back
got,
then?
No, because they were in the same, got divorced. So he says, no, we knocked him off. Mr. Ruddick and I, he's dead, yeah. What happened? He said, oh, he wouldn't pay his drug bills at the arsehole, Johnny. Beeper. His nickname was Beeper. So he said, oh, we made a blue, though. Oh, shit, he said, we've killed him over in Preston and we've cut him up into pieces to get rid of the body, cut him up with a saw. We're going to burn him. So we got all the four of the boys were sitting over there having a stubby. We lit the fire out in the yard. We're having a barbecue and burning him bit by bit. Bit of work in that, he said. I said, well, he stuffed up bad. It was a total fire ban day.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we're sitting there burning his body. Down the sideway comes the fire brigade.
No.
Kick the gate down, put the fire out, give us a warning. No. Don't let it happen again. It's, you know, and they didn't even see the bits of elbow and the foot sticking out of the ashes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he says, but that's another day at work. And ha, 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 it's all funny stuff.
Were you shocked when you
but,
heard that
but
stuff?
That's, you can't, I can't go home sad about that. That's, to me, funny. I'm not going to let it get me down.
Mm.
I'm married 45 years. I know what getting down's like.
Did you sometimes feel humanity for these prisoners?
Oh,
of course.
Oh, it is
could
to help
you see
them.
Through, like, I'm obsessed by this. I want you to talk about it. But, you know, you talked about Gary David Webb, the mutilator. Did you ever feel, like, be able to look at their life in context from their childhood or say, these people had a terrible childhood and that kind of explains why they're so bad?
No, not him.
Okay.
Normal, when I say normal, normal kids who needed help, couldn't read, oh, yeah, I'll write the letter for you. I'll read the letter for you. I'll help you. You know, I'll do a phone call for you to your mum. But him, he was just a... Gary David. You want to hear about Gary David?
Yes, please.
We used to call him the $6 million man. There's a show on TV he made me a lot of money. Gary Dave was a mutilator. One of the first jobs I got in 78 was get down, me and an officer, go down to G Division where the, what do you call them? I've forgotten the word.
Mentally, health
all there.
Unit.
Someone slashed up. I never heard of slashing up before, Michelle. You heard of slashing up?
No.
Have you heard of bronzing up?
Yes.
Can't show you, but I can explain it to you.
Covering yourself in your own poo.
Yeah, come and get me now, you screw dog. Covered in shit, so you hose him down. So down there, he slashed himself to pieces. So he never really attacked us much. Throw shit at you and spite you, and he bit me. And I ran into a psychiatrist once who's writing a book on him. He was unique. He was unique in the psychiatric world. He's had a book just about himself. He doesn't fit into any category. He was unique. So anyway, he slashed himself up. So we got to know Gary over the years. Gary slashed up. Gary swallowed this. Gary's cut. Anyway, he cut his penis off in G division. Cut it off, knocked up, put, opened the trap. He had his willy on the trap. In the ambulance, microsurgery, sewed it all on again, brought him back a week or so later. And it'll be pretty sore while he ripped it off again. Bang, second time. That'd be worse, Emily. That'd make your eyes water.
I actually feel
but this time he flushed
shocked.
It down the toilet.
Did
he? See, he only had a little stump when he had a wee. Stitched a little stump. Gary, stand close to the toilet, son. You're going to wee on the floor. Go and get yourself nicked. So he used to start swallowing things. My mate Jack was in the hospital. He's cut himself. He slashed himself to pieces. He could swallow anything. He swallowed a knife and fork. Jack said he swallowed his fork one night. He knocked on the glass. He had his own little cubicle and the security ward at St. Fee's. Swallowed that. I've just swallowed my fork too. So when they took a picture of X-ray, here's looks like a motel sign. Here's the knife and fork.
I crossed over.
He cut his, he put pens and nibs, pencils up his willy, what's left, and break all the lead off. So the surgeons had to pull all the carbon out, pencil. He cut his Achilles tendons. His feet wouldn't walk. He used to crawl around at one stage. Gary, what do you get up? He'd get like paper clips, two with elastic band, and wind them up like a spring. Put a bit of cotton around them. He'd swallow it. Then as his stomach juices evaporated the cotton, it opened up like a star at his stomach. He didn't feel pain.
What was he in jail for?
And we'll be back with the predictably disturbing answer to that question after the break. And if you head to our website, AustralianTrueCrimePodcast.com, you'll find some interesting articles about Gary David, including an excerpt from one of Chopper Reid's books, in which he gives his appraisal of the man, which I have to say is quite touching. That's AustralianTrueCrimePodcast.com. Coming up on Australian True Crime, we hear about a couple of great escape attempts from Pentridge and more about the prison's master butchers. But first, back to the man whose masochism changed the course of the Victorian corrections system, Gary David, starting with how he ended up in Pentridge in the first place.
Well, we asked him. I used to sit and talk for him for hours. When he was lucid, he'd tell you what was going on. Boss, he said, I wanted to kill prison officers or police. I knew all you blokes knocked off at 10 to 5. I was going to sit out the front of Pentridge and shoot as many as I could.
Oh.
So I decided to kill a copper instead. So he told me he got a mini moke and a rifle, and he told me he got it from the zoo. He worked at the zoo, I think, whether he's lying, this is what he told me, to help. Broke into the zoo, got their 22 rifle, pinched their mini moke, they got around, and went down the peninsula. When some pizza shop owner came out, he shot them. Didn't kill them, and a copper came, and he's in the dark waiting for the police. And the copper's still alive. He's been on TV. He said, bang. He said, I felt one that hit me in the stomach. Lucky it was only a 22, and I fell on down. He's come running over behind me, and I turned my back on him. He's gone, bang, bang, shot me in the back. Because I remember when it happened. I remember the mini moke on the side of the Mornington Freeway Park where they got him. So the copper survived. Luckily, he hadn't killed anyone, but... So you'd sit in bed in hospital for hours. I remember one Easter I had off, 4 days. Oh, beauty. Well, you got 4 16-hour shifts on him. You'd make a lot of money sitting there all day, 6 or 7 in the morning till midnight.
Because he swallowed something or
cut
something off.
Something off. Yeah, cut himself.
God.
He'd say, I'm due for me tablets. I want them now. I want them now. He can't. We've got to wean him off the tablets. He was having them every 2 hours, every hour. Now we're going to make it 2 hours. I want him now. I want him now. He started to go down in bed, shake, and you see him, he's shitting his hand and throw shit at you. You little turd. So you'd grab him, because you wouldn't handcuff him in hospital unless they were causing trouble. So you'd handcuff him to the bed. So then he'd come out of it. Took him hours to come out of this psychotic. And I remember telling him one day he's gone off his head in hospital. So two of us jumped on him. I got him in a headlock and he's bit me finger. We got the handcuffs on him. He's screaming and carrying on. It's embarrassing because you've got other people in the ward watching all this.
You're showing me up, Gary.
So I'm sitting there when he's back with us. I said, you know, Gary, I read this in a story. During the Second World War, the Japanese commandos, you could tie them up and truss them up. But they could still commit suicide, Gary. I said they could bite their tongues off, put their head back and drown in their own blood. Oh, yeah. Years later, I've forgotten all this. We're in hospital again. He's gone off again. He's going to bronze up on him again, get the handcuffs on him, and I'm holding him, and he says, it's no good hanging on to me. I'm going to bite my tongue off and drown in the blood.
Oh, my God.
I thought I told you that years ago.
Oh, God.
I don't know if it's true or not.
Well,
doesn't matter, but it's a good. Is that a good story or what?
I don't know. Is it? Did he do it?
I have to tell you something. I was just looking on the Wikipedia page about him, and he was the catalyst for the Victorian government bringing in something called the Community Protection Act because they needed to protect Gary from himself, but also the public. He had a terrible life, Vaughn. And his father was Rupert. His mother was an alcoholic, and Rupert was a habitual criminal and pedophile.
Yeah,
and they were in and out of homes. And then he was 38 when he died, Gary David. So,
I can't
life.
Worry about that. That's
not,
what,
a, yeah, not, a, not
you've
got to
worry. You've got to do your job.
All I've got to make sure he doesn't get out and hurt someone. Anyway, yeah. So they changed the law to keep him in jail because you've got to get out and kill everyone. I'm going to kill everyone.
Wow.
Don't kill you. I'm going to slaughter the police force, the prison officers. Nah,
yeah.
They changed the law to keep him in jail. Come up to me because he liked me for some reason. He said, Mr. Ruddick, he says, they're going to build my own unit over in, was it Mont Park, over in Plenty Road, my own unit with my own guards, special law, keep me in there. Do you want to be one of them? I says, not really, Gary, no. I don't really want to do that, no.
No.
I look at you every day. So, no, I declined his kind offer. Mm. Anyway, he was suing the state of Victoria for $12 million. And I was sitting there one day, mail officer, professional visit, Gary David's got his lawyer coming in. Yeah, I know he cut himself around. I forgot what happened. I hadn't seen him for a while. I think he was in A Division. Can't remember. So I've gone down to the contact visit there. I brought him in. You've got to strip search him. Gary David comes in and his lawyer's in the box. Right, Gary, you've got to search him for drugs. Take everything off. So he takes his... I'm not paying that much attention. Done it thousands and thousands of times. Give us your T-shirt. That's wringing wet. Oh, I forgot what he had done. He cut his stomach open.
Oh, my God.
He used to get around with a razor blade. He'd carry razor blades and knives up his bum, wrapped up in glad wrap or tin foil, because you're not allowed to look inside them. And that's how they carried stuff around, you know. So he always had a blade. So he cut his stomach open from there to there. He pulled all his intestines out, all over the floor, in the ambulance, down into the hospital, put them all back in again, sewed up the cavity, pulled it all together. So he didn't like that, so he pulled all the stitches out and he had all his intestines oozing out of him, and he used to get his own shit and rub into the wound because he wanted to get the poison going. He used to rub crap into the... All these wounds he did, he used to rub his own poo into them to try and get infections going. But, you know, you probably cut your finger peeling the potatoes, you dive. You know, he survived all this for... I think we had him for years.
Yeah.
12 years, I don't know, 12 years. Anyway, I saw his stomach hanging out. And I went, oh, no, that really. So I went and saw the governor. I'm not touching him anymore, governor. He said, look, it's sterile, that liquid oozing out of him. It won't hurt you. I said, I don't care. I'm getting close to leaving by now. I had enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, I told the nurse, yeah, but he said, did you see the red band around it, the red band? That's peritonitis that set in. The faction's got him. And he died 2 weeks later. That killed him.
That's what.
But he wouldn't have his stomach sewn back in again. So this is what we used to put up with, not on a daily basis.
That's extreme though, isn't it?
This is extreme stuff that puts you off.
And it says here, by the way, that he was variously diagnosed with antisocial, borderline, histrionic and narcissistic personality disorders. So they diagnosed him with various things over the years, but never. And how do you manage a prisoner like that to keep them safe but you safe as well? That would be very challenging.
And everyone must have gone to the governor at various times and said, I'm not doing this.
Every time he hit the headlines, Gary David's cut this off, cut that off, letters would roll in for him. I'm the mail officer.
From who?
I'm a 14-year-old schoolgirl. I think you're being victimised. Here's my phone number. When you get out, give me a ring. I love you, Gary.
No.
In the rubbish tin. Illegally, I did all that. Their mothers wouldn't know he's doing this. This is pre-computer, like 80... What, 90-something? Oh, yeah.
93.
And he used to go out. He had a following. Because after he died, I'm in there reading the newspaper, doing the visits. And his lawyer was in there, a girl. She come past me and there was an article about Gary David in the paper. And she saw it as she walked past me. And she didn't even ask me. She just broke out into tears and grabbed the paper off me and ran away to read this article. I said, excuse me, it's poor Gary.
Oh, God.
He had a following. They all loved him.
I'm just sorry that... It's like, yeah, someone has to take care of people like Gary. You know, you can't go to the boss and say, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing Gary anymore because someone has to.
You give up and it was useless at the end. You wouldn't bother writing all this stuff up unless it affected you or you wanted to get some extra time in jail. They changed the law then under Kennan. The governor would hear it. Give him an extra 10 days, loss of... And they go to the Brunswick Magistrates Court at the end. Would you give him 10 days jail for spitting on you? No, throw it out. Because it's nothing in court. Mm. But in jail in front of his mates, it means something to him. But we're getting nowhere. So eventually, it was just a lost cause.
Isn't it funny that they let prisoners do butchering?
It seems weird to me that they had prisoners butchering meat.
Well, we lost a knife one day. It was a big knife. Someone knocked it off. I used to work in the kitchen at times. So they ended up welding an eye on the end of the knife and the handle and chaining it to the bench.
Mm.
The prisoner wanted to chain it or the chain of your knife so you couldn't steal it. Anyway, we lost the knife.
Did you get it back?
Yeah. So did another bloke too. Doing hospital escorts, me and I couldn't think of his name. The new school had started, 20 people. We used to call them Smurfs. They didn't have the same uniform as you, tunics. They had like service station attendant uniforms that I had on. These were the new school, 2 weeks orientation. And so they're all standing in a big group on the lawn in front of B Division. We saw someone laying down, rushed over. Someone's been stabbed.
No.
He's laying on the ground. He's been stabbed 3 times with a big knife through him, come out his back. And his stomach was oozing out, so we jumped on him, holding his stomach in. Not only blood comes out, all the black shit from his intestines between your fingers. Quick, go in, get the knife. Someone come out, I've got the knife. It was Parker, knocked it off. This bloke was a weightlifter, big, strong, laying there. 3 holes through him, through his liver, intestines, hold his guts in, get an ambulance, da-da-da. Righto, there come the governor and all run over. All the school was watching. Hey, you been there a couple of days? Watch this bloke screaming. He didn't die. We took him to hospital, spent 16 hours with him, sewed him all up. I asked the doctor, is this bloke going to make it? He said, when did it happen? He said, about 3 o'clock. He said, supper, 6 now. Yeah, he'll probably make it now. He'll probably make it now a little bit of time. So we don't need a night shift. Got to get a night shift in to keep. So we go home at midnight. But next day, about 10 or 12 left. They all resigned overnight.
Oh.
This is a bad introduction.
Just saw that.
Anyway, that was Parker got him. And I saw him months later. He got out of hospital. He was emaciated, very skinny, and he looks like shit. Because this knocked the stuffing out of you.
Yeah.
When you're holding a bloke's guts in and the blood and the shit's coming out of your fingers, you know, after a while it gets you down a bit. Then you get drunk and you come good again. That's another story. Then there's Ted Eastwood. This is when I started Hayes. I wrote a few, the blokes who were in 8th Division, the day I started, my first day shift. I started on a night shift. It was Billy Longley, Painter and Docker murderer.
Yes.
Kevin Taylor, the kid who shot Pat Shannon in the Drewers Hotel, South Melbourne. Ted Eastwood, the Faraday kidnapper, kidnapped a school
full of...
Okay.
Yes.
Why was in H Division? Do you know why?
Why?
His mother and sister got up on... Darren Hinch or someone had a show at 7 o'clock and they got up on TV and says, my son Ted didn't do it.
Mm.
He was home with us at the time. It wasn't him did the Faraday kidnapping. They put him in Geelong Jail, which is a museum now, and he broke out of it and did it again. Another classroom full of kids. So he did do it. Bobby Barron, that cafe... There's a tin roof. My mate's having a coffee there one day and he heard bang, 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 footsteps over the roof. G Division's just there. The criminally insane. Criminally insane is what I'm looking for. Yeah, look, what the hell? Here's Bobby Barron running over the roof, down the wall in a light fitting. I can show you the light fitting and went down towards Bell Street.
Mm.
Got out of the yards. Chased him, got him. Bobby Barron did about 40 years in jail. Thomas Embling, probably not guilty, grounds of insanity. Bobby Barron was up on the roof, got away. That was a... He used to talk to God all day and Jesus and that. He was hitchhiking, Bobby Barron, and a Salvation Army couple picked him up.
Not the Salvos again.
Oh, I know the story.
He murdered them,
oh, no.
Took them out in the bush to dump the bodies. But their car got bogged. So he dragged them under the wheels and drove over the dead bodies so he could get traction with the back wheels.
Oh, he used their bodies for
this
traction.
This is Bobby Barron. Then there was Jimmy Laughlin there. First time I saw someone bronzing up, first day, night shift was a Sunday night. Jimmy Laughlin and Keith Ford were sent back from a country jail for... doing something bad in a country jail because their conduct wasn't good. And they were bronzing up through the trap. Come and get me your screw dogs, shit all over them.
Jimmy never struck me as a bronzing up guy, was he?
He'd copy anyone. He was a follower.
Right.
Keithy Four was the leader. Chopper was the leader.
Disappointing.
He was just a poor, brain damaged, had a bad limp where he jumped out of the wall, broke his leg.
I thought he got shot in the bum when he was doing that robbery.
Yeah, that's how they got him. Yeah. That's a story. I'm not sure that's true, but it doesn't matter, does it?
No.
I don't think...
Not to me.
I don't know if I would have lasted long in a job if I had to confront someone smearing themselves in their own poo, because I just think that is too confronting.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I'm saying.
You hose them down first.
Yeah. I'm going to the boss and saying, I'm not dealing with that. Mm. That's what I said to Vaughan. I just feel so bad that people have to deal with this stuff, yeah. Let alone someone saying, I've just cut open my guts, here's my intestines. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to rub my own shit into that.
That's it.
And like, I'm not dealing with that.
No. And it's like what Narelle talks about with PTSD. People in jobs like police, yeah. prisons, emergency services, you've got to deal with that every day.
Yep.
We might see something horrible once in our life.
Yeah.
No wonder people get PTSD.
Well,
See,
we had no one to help us, prison officers. They had doctors there, day shift, nurses. They had dentists on all the time. They had welfare workers, social workers, psychiatrists helping them. We had nothing. No, but they had all the help they can get. We got nothing. We never even got tea and coffee. We bought our own tea and coffee, and they got everything.
That's outrageous.
And on a hot day, they had five swimming pools, three in-ground pools, a couple of above-ground pools. They'd be up, take tent post. Up there with your mini Ruger 14, with your 10 rounds of ammunition. Hot day, 40 degrees. This is before they put air conditioners. Be up there, stinking hot. They knock off at work when it's 37, 38 because it's too hot for them to work in the, you know, make number plates, boot shop.
Mm.
They'd be swimming in the pool all afternoon and you're up in the tower in a woolen pants watching them and I think there's something wrong here. Why aren't I in the pool and they locked up?
Yeah.
You hear
You've
me?
Got a great temperament. I just would quit, firstly, and secondly, if I couldn't, I would have PTSD.
And he has to pay for.
Yeah. Mm. But that's why a lot of people now say, why are there refugees on Nauru and criminals in prisons that have better conditions, you know?
Women in prison fight to have their kids in jail with them. In my time, a woman who wants a child under 5 years old, they were allowed to have them at Fairly, your own child, and they used them as tools to get everything they wanted, extra milk rations, extra food rations. They were used as tools. We had a court case, a bloke in A Division. I used to get him ready for court. I want my child in A Division with me. We've got equality these days. He went to court, he lost. You can't have a child in a man's prison. And you can see the reason why.
Yes.
And he lost the court
case. But I also see his point.
Exactly. So when you want equality, you've got to think it out.
Yeah, I do see his point.
We have nearly equality. Yeah. So the women fight to have their children in custody and detention because you're better off with your parents.
Yeah. So why not men?
Just as long as you're with your parents, the kids are great.
Yeah, so why not men? Why can't men in prison have their children with them?
You can't do it.
I know that doesn't make common sense. I absolutely know there's no common sense, but I also understand the argument. So then what's the next step? We're building family prisons?
I can't get involved with all these people.
No, I understand. Yes.
Yeah, you should help. I can't.
Yeah.
You can't do it. I had 1,000 of them. I've got to go home to my wife and kids at 5 o'clock. I can't take all that home with me. The ones who got involved wouldn't last long.
She's got so many stories. It's unbelievable.
Thank God, because our listeners just want more and more and more.
In 1980, Chopper Reed, you've heard of him?
I think I may have
John
somewhere
Price
along the line.
And
yeah.
Jimmy Loughlin cut out of H Division. And during the tours, you can see where it's been welded up. They cut up to the yards where they film Chopper.
You know I'm obsessed with Jimmy Loughlin. Did you ever hear your episode from last time?
Oh, yeah, twice.
Oh, great. Because
right?
I was going to say, remember I cut in bits of the movie?
You did?
Yeah, I did because I loved all of that.
Anyway, three of them cut out.
Yes.
And got up on the roof of A Division and H. It's all the same. H is part of A. They got up on the left in there for a night or two. Got floodlights left in there. And they're throwing tiles down.
Oh, no.
It's Chopper Reed, Jimmy Loughlin and John Price.
You leave them up there. Why? Do you just think
they get up there and get them down.
You think they'll get hungry.
Where are they going to go? They're going nowhere. Put extra staff on all night. Not going anywhere. Get out and we'll shoot them if they run away. Money joking. But they wrecked the job. They just got up in the roof. And Chopper came down because he's not normal, this bloke. He's back. I wasn't there when he came down, but I saw the photographs of his back. He was sliced open. He got a stick with nails in it and opened his back up. And in his books he says, oh, so-and-so cut me, and he did it himself.
He's mad for her.
He needed an excuse to come down. Well, I didn't give in.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week with another case and another interview with an insider. Take care.